just after Thanksgiving, I said to my husband and my kids, I was like, hey, what do you think? I would do this podcast. And we were in a rental car. We were visiting people out of town, so they were trapped. And they couldn't, you know, they couldn't get away from me and ignore it.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 293, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we get started today, just want to remind you, whether you're new or whether you've been around for a while, that I give away a free training program each and every month to one lucky winner chosen at random. And all you have to do to get entered to win is head over to the homepage, dizruns.com, or go right to dizruns.com/giveaway. Either way, you'll get to the same place. You'll have a chance to enter. All you got to do is enter your name and your email address. And I pick one person each and every month. And that's it. That's all there is to it. You're automatically re-entered. And those training plans are good for whatever race you might be training for. You know, something in the neighborhood of 16 weeks long, and, you know, marathon, half marathon, 5K, you know, whatever, ultra marathon, if that's what you're into. You know, it's your choice. No expiration. If you win, you can use it whenever it suits you. So if you have any questions, let me know. But otherwise, just head over to dizruns.com and click the button that says click here to enter. And that's all there is to it. And with that, let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is an endurance athlete that has completed 3 Ironman tries, 6 half irons, 5 marathons, and Lord knows how many races of shorter distance than that. She started participating in various endurance races just a handful of years ago, but to say that she has been bitten by the endurance bug is a bit of an understatement. In addition to training virtually all the time, last year she also started coaching triathletes, and earlier this year she launched the Mile After Mile podcast. So without any further ado, it's time to head out for a few easy miles and a fun chat today with Ms. Amy Stone. Thanks for joining us today, Amy.
Thanks so much for having me. It sounds so great when you read my bio like that. I was feeling very accomplished.
Yes, yes. Well, you're certainly more accomplished than me, especially in the triathlon area, but we'll get into all that as we go. But guys, if you haven't checked out Amy before or connected with her, you can check out her website and blog, which is found at amysaysso.com. All one word with a bunch of S's in there, but you know, just like it sounds, amysaysso.com. And on Twitter, you can find her with the handle at @bcamysaysso. I'm assuming that's for because.
That's right.
And on Instagram and Facebook, you can find her at the same handle both places, and that is at @AmySaysSoMiami, which gives you a little clue on what part of the world that she might happen to reside in. But I'll have all those links and anything else linked up that we talk about that makes sense in the show notes for this episode, which you'll be able to find at dizruns.com/293. So, Amy, the way we always get things started on the show is with a simple question. And for someone like you that does both, you know, running races and triathlons, I don't know if I may ask it twice. I may ask it once. We'll see which way it goes. You can answer it either way for the first time. And that is just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
All right. That's a great question. So I can answer that twice. I was confused as to what it would be when you said I could answer it twice, but now I get it. So my favorite distance for triathlons, that's a good question. My favorite distance at the moment is the full Ironman distance. And my favorite distance for running races, even though I don't do it very often, I guess that's going to be part of both the answers, is the full marathon. And the reason I'm going to say that is because while I love to run shorter races, there's such a commitment that goes into those longer races that the finish line is truly something very spectacular. The achievement that you get, even if you just go out to run a marathon and you're kind of undertrained and you say, I'm just going to go out there for the experience. When you cross the finish line after 26.2 miles or in a full Ironman, 140.6 miles, it is a true sense of accomplishment. And you really know that you've battled through something and you're really proud of it. It sticks with you for a long time, the sense of achievement. So those are my favorite, but which not to say that I do them all the time. It takes a lot of training for me to get ready for those.
Certainly.
So I'll do a lot more half marathons. And I love that because you can just kind of pick them up as you go, not, you know, maybe with one day's notice, but you can say, hey, you know, next month there's a half marathon. I'm going to go do that with my friends. And it's been a long time since I've done a straight 5K or 10K. And it's funny because I've been doing the long stuff for such a long time that I'm almost kind of afraid of it because I haven't put that kind of red line effort out there in a long time. I don't even know what it would feel like anymore. So,
well, I mean, I try to not do as well, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but I try to do as few 5Ks as possible, kind of for that same reason. But let me just tell you, it hurts. You know, if you're going to do it, it's not going to be an enjoyable experience, at least not for us distancey type of people.
That's right. That's right. So I was thinking about it the other day because I told somebody to do something at 5K pace. And then I thought to myself, I don't even know right, exactly. I was like, what would my 5K pace be now? So yes, exactly. That was my thought.
Gotcha. So, gotcha. What got you started in the endurance game, running triathlons, whichever avenue that you got started? Did you get started as a runner first?
I did. So I moved to Miami after college. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking for a way to make friends. And I had a job where I traveled a lot. And so I was making friends in my job and I was making friends when I traveled. But I was looking for a way to find new people to hang out with and get in shape kind of in that way after you graduate from college where you're just like, I think I should be a little more in shape than I am now. So I am really lucky that in Miami we have a fantastic running store named Footworks. And this is before, now we have the Miami Marathon, but this is before there was the Miami Marathon. So the closest marathon to us was closer to you, the Disney Marathon and Space Coast. So there wasn't a natural event for this. So they sent, this is the second time I've told this story in a couple of weeks, and I don't remember any longer how I found out about it. I don't know if I picked up a flyer or if I went into the store looking for shoes, but they have training programs for a variety of things. And so I signed up for what they called Fitness 101. And I didn't really realize it, but that's more of a introduction to running and run walking. So it was very funny. The woman who is the owner of the store, Lori, was like, you know, that's great that you signed up for that, but you really should be over here in this half marathon training program. I was like, no, you're crazy. What are you talking about? I'm not going to do that. And I did a couple days of runs with them. They do fun runs a couple times during the week from their store, and then they do weekend trainings. And I did a couple fun runs with them, and they're like, see, you should be in the half marathon group. So she literally just kind of moved my card with my name on it into this other pile and said, congratulations, there you are. And there wasn't a half marathon, though, to actually run. We just, at the end of the training group, they just mapped it out for us and we did it just with us. They gave us bibs, but it wasn't a true event. And it rolled right into their marathon training program for the Disney Marathon. And the same kind of thing. She's like, oh, and now you're ready to do the marathon training program. I don't even remember if I paid more, you know, to sign up for a different training program. She's like, here you go. And then I was like, all right. And then I ran the Disney Marathon in 2000, I think.
Gotcha.
Because it's right in the beginning of January. But I believe it was 2000 was the first one I did. Are you a big Disney Marathon fan?
Yes-ish.
is this a tough question?
Well, it's an evolving answer. I guess I was back before you had to like set the alarm to register within the first like 16 seconds of the window opening or it sold out automatically.
Yeah.
I mean, I've run the Disney Marathon three or four times, I guess three times, I think. I don't know, three or four, whatever. And various half marathons at Walt Disney World, probably 10 or so, 9 or 10 of them. I enjoy them for what they're worth. They're convenient for me cause I'm close. So I don't have to stay anywhere. I don't have to pay for hotels or travel or things like that. I think there's something, if you like Disney, which I do, there, you know, it's a fun thing to do. But, if you're looking for, and I'm going to sound running snobby saying this, but, if you're looking for a real kind of serious, like you want to really race hard, Disney might not be the best event for you.
Yeah. It's hard to race those fast unless you're in that very first group.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, you know, I see some of the people that talk about them as they're the greatest races ever. They're so well organized and this and that and the other. And they do have it down to a science. And I don't know that I would say that it's the greatest ever, but you know, for having 25,000 people to go through it, like they probably do it about the way that they should. I just don't know that I'm going to be signing up for too many more Disney races in the not too distant future, but you never know. Never say never. I mean, like I said, it's close and convenient, and there's goods and bads, just like there is for any bigger race or smaller race or whatever. There's pros and cons of everything. And maybe I've just done so many of them that I'm kind of over the cons, and I don't see the pros as much anymore just because of, you know, bias of doing it so many times, whatever.
I think it just comes down to preference sometimes, mm-hmm, too. Certainly. So the thing that did it for me was, that's the first and only time I've done the Disney Marathon. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot different now. When I did it, we did the half and the full all on the same day. Mm-hmm. And now they've broken it off. But the thing that made it great, there are two things that I was like, oh, I don't need to do this one again, is that you have to be out there in that parking lot at like 2 a.m.
Yeah, it's early.
And it's cold. Usually. Yep. I don't know if it's ever warm. It was freezing the year I did it. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I didn't love is that once the sun is up, like once the parks are starting to open, you're just on the service roads and the highway.
Right.
So, and I ran. So I think that Animal Kingdom may have been like brand spanking new when I ran it. And I remember we ran through Animal Kingdom and came out the entrance to Animal Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And then there was a group of people all lined up, and you think that they're there to cheer for you, but then you realize they're standing in the line to get into the park. And not only are they not there to cheer for you, they're super annoyed, mm-hmm, that you're there in their way. And I was like, this is hilarious.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, I've had people where, you know, you're 23 miles deep in the studios, and like, you know, all you want to do is finish. And like, that's when the park is opening up. So there's people coming and they're not paying attention. And it's just, you know, again, it is what it is. And
yes,
I won't say that I'm never going to do another Disney race, but it's not on my list of anytime soons at the moment. So.
Oh yeah. No, I bet you do. Cause it is so close to you.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I get to sleep at home. I get to eat, you know, certainly control my diet before the race, which you can't always do when you travel. So there's a lot of benefits to being local and running that race.
Oh yeah. And like, so my local race is the Miami Marathon. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it has its issues too. Definitely. Sure. You know, it's got like one of the more disorganized starts of any race I've ever done. It's like, it's very Miami. It's very hilarious. They have organized corrals, but they can't seem to keep people from like cutting the line. So for the first like 30 minutes, you're surrounded by walkers no matter what, mm-hmm, you do, which is so, but I do it every single year, and I just have learned to kind of embrace it for its specialness, because it is my hometown race. So
yeah well, and I mean, I sometimes with the walkers at the front of the races, it's just, you know, I guess that maybe I try to give them the benefit of the doubt, like maybe they didn't realize, you know, maybe they're new to this. But it can be frustrating if you want to go out and race hard and you're stuck and nothing you can do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's whatever, you know, it's whatever, however it works out. It's funny, the Miami Marathon, you go sort of straight up a bridge, and it's dark when we start because it's super dark and you can't see anything. It can be some funny things. I ran it one year with my brother, and he was going for a time. Mm-hmm. And we started together in a corral, and then he's like, all right, I'm going to go try and, you know, go ahead and hit my time. And so he's dodging and he's bobbing and he's weaving and he's going around all these people. And we run down by the American Airlines Arena, and I round the corner. It's been 10 or 12 minutes that we've been separated, and I'm just jogging along, not even out of breath. And I look over and he's right next to me, but he's totally winded and like frazzled because he spent the last 12 minutes like bobbing and weaving around people, and he hasn't made it anywhere.
And he added an extra mile to his race by
right, exactly,
zigzagging.
exactly. He's like, what are you doing here? I was like, hey, you know, and then he's like, ah, gotta go. And then, yep, you know, he motored off.
Oh, crazy. What got you started in triathlons? What made you make the switch?
So same guy, my brother, when he moved to Miami several years ago, he is a swimmer and I was the runner. So somehow that worked out in our mind that we were going to do triathlons because we could do them together. Obviously not together, but at the same time. So we decided to sign up for a series of triathlons in the summer down here called the Key Biscayne Trilogy races. So it's the same race in the same location, 1 month apart. There's three, mm-hmm, of them 1 month apart. So we decided to do those. And the first one was a disaster for both of us. So we had to go back and do the next one. And then that one was fun. And then we had to go back and do the next one. And so that was how the cycle started. And triathlon is really addictive for those of us who have a compulsive personality, because it has, say, you know, if you do a running race at the end, after it all finishes in, you think to yourself, okay, you know, I could have done a little better if I maybe did X, Y, Z. And we all go through that sort of afterward analysis, you know, how could I have improved if I did more strength work, if I stretched, if I had a better line on the turns, whatever it might have been. And in a triathlon, there's so many moving parts.
Right.
That there's like 15 different ways. You're like, all right, if I buy this new helmet and if I got my nutrition right and if the swim had flat, you know, flat seas and all this, there's just all these little things that, so you constantly think that you're improving and you can do better. It's it's really, it's hilarious how fast it becomes just all encompassing.
I bet. Does it ever get almost, what's the way to say this? Almost overwhelming in the sense that I had a race last summer, actually. I PR'd in the half marathon, and my A goal was to run under 1:45, which would have been like a 7 minute PR or something like that, 7 or 8 minutes, and I ended up running a 1:45:04. So it was still, you know, it was this huge PR. Like, I should have been happy, and yet because I was that close to hitting my A goal, like, it took me a couple of weeks to like actually embrace the fact that, like, you know, I really did run a good race. Like, there's really nothing to be upset about. But I'm looking back going, you know, I stopped for Gatorade here, and like, I stopped to pour water over my head there. And like, you know, I walked an extra two steps that I didn't have to during this water stop. And it was just like, I started nitpicking. So like you mentioned with the triathlon, all the moving parts, does that ever get almost overwhelming and like take away from a good race because of all the places where you're like, man, I could have trimmed a second here and a second there?
It definitely can. It, so you missed it by 4 seconds, 5 seconds.
Yep.
That's painful. That's
I would have rather missed it by a minute and a half, and I would still have been really happy with a big PR, and you know, like, it was just crazy.
Yes. No, that, so I've never had one where I was that close, but that is really hard. So one of, it's especially with triathlons where you have an open water swim and the conditions can be really variant from race to race. It can be really difficult and almost like setting yourself up for failure to have a time goal. Because if you're going to swim if you're going to race an Olympic distance or a half iron, you've got almost a mile swim. You can be like, you know, 4 to 10 minutes difference in the swim if you're swimming with or against a current. So like, and that is exactly what happens. You work really hard through the whole race, and then you see your time, you're like, oh my God, what, why was it this slow? Like, what happened? So I learned really early on, it's easier to be this flexible with the longer races, is to be, you know, very rigid about like my goal of finishing and very committed to the finish and very rigid about my goal of how I want like different parts of the race to go in terms of how I feel and how I manage the situation, but very flexible about how it goes throughout the day time-wise. So I'll say, all right, my goal is that I want to swim and feel like I have a strong swim and come out of the water fresh and happy and feel like, and after an Ironman swim, which is 2.4 miles, I want to be able to run into transition. That's how I judge how my output was. Cause if I'm totally gassed, I like will walk into transition. So I want, and that's what I'm looking for, as opposed to, I want to swim, you know, a 110, 2.4 mile swim. Because if I show up on race day and it's super windy and there's a lot of waves, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So I'm going to be really unhappy. And the same kind of thing with the bike, things can happen that are out of your control. So you can have a time goal, a super aggressive time goal. And if you get a flat tire and have to change the tire, even if you do that lickety split, you're going to lose 10 minutes.
Right.
And changing a tire in 10 minutes, that's awesome. You should be like, you know, you should be celebrating that victory. Like, oh my gosh, I did it in 10 minutes and it lasted the rest of the race. And if you're totally focused on that time, the time of completion, you can be really giving yourself a hard time. I actually know a guy whose name was Mark, and I haven't seen him for years and years, but he, when he finished an Ironman, he was so focused on his time goal that when he missed that time goal, he took the medal off and put it in the garbage.
Oh.
And he was just so disappointed. And you're talking, this is like a 10-hour race. There's a, you know, 6 months to get ready for that. And thankfully, somebody that was with him dug it out and was like, I think you're going to wake up tomorrow and wish you had not done that. But, you know, it is, sometimes you can be so close to the what your desired result is that it's hard to see what you've accomplished until afterwards. Yeah.
You said that was something you kind of had to accept or learn and kind of, you know, as you got into triathlons. Was that a hard thing to grasp?
Yeah, I don't think it was hard so much as it was surprising as you went along. I remember I did, we have a race on South Beach, which is now called, I think, the South Beach Triathlon. It used to be called Nautica. And I had worked all year in between doing this race. It's in April. And I had worked really, really hard on my swim, which was the hardest part. Mm-hmm. It's still the hardest part of a triathlon for me. And I was really excited about how I was going to do. And I swam and I swam and I swam. And my time was like 8 minutes slower than I thought it was going to be. Mm. And I was like, gosh, I thought I was going to do great. I thought I swam really fast. And then somebody who was with me said, oh, you know what? You were only sixth in your age group. You did have a great swim. Look, everybody's times are right. Slow. And that was one of the times that, I started to put it together. And probably everybody is different. For me, having a reasonable expectation of what I'm going to accomplish, it really affects how happy I am with it at the end. Other people probably can do it differently.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of, well, not even kind of, that clearly comes down to knowing yourself and what, how you tick and what, like I said, yeah. what makes a good race versus a bad race for you and trying to stack the deck as much as you can so that it's going to be a good race.
Oh yeah. But if I missed it by 4 seconds, I would
tough.
Be, yeah, no, that's really hard. That's really hard. It took me 6 months or so to break the 2 hour barrier in the half marathon when I was working for that. And it was several races. I don't think I ever missed it by 4 seconds, but I was within a minute for several races. And I was just like serial racing, trying to find other races.
Which probably
to try and
made
go
it
for
worse
it.
Because you're racing all the time.
Yeah. And my big challenge was I had to get my nutrition down so that I didn't have to stop during the race. Mm-hmm. That was like, I was like, oh, if I just did not have to stop.
Right, right. Well, and it's one of those where, you start getting close and man, it eats at you. But, you got to do what you got to do. And at the end of the day, like, you know, which again, it's easy for me, the coach to say, it's easy for me a year and a half later to say that, you know, you do the best you can on that day. And like, you can't regret that, but man, right after the fact, you're still going, man, what if I would have done this? What if I would have done this? It's ridiculous.
It is. It's very hard. One of the things that I do find that's helpful, which I don't know if this happens to you, is that whenever I find, because it still happens, you know, I'll push myself and I'll say, oh, I really thought that I was going to be faster, and I'll be standing there at the finish line, you know, sort of, and you're fatigued going through and rehashing. But then I get to see people who are finishing behind me. And it is a nice reminder that, you know, whatever our goal is, whether our goal is like yours 145, which is blazing fast, or maybe if it's a first time half marathon or something, your goal might be 220, you know, and you really, and you see the glee and the achievement of somebody who's doing that for, you know, and they're happy with their time. And you think, you know what, who am I to be, you know, to be saying, I wish it was 4 seconds. Cause you and I are lucky. Nobody's paying us to win. So,
right. Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the beauties of whatever endurance sport is that, you know, you're always competing against yourself. And so,
yes.
Like you said, you watch the other folks coming in that, you know, that my day that I'm so pissed that I missed it by 4 seconds and they're going, God, I would give my right leg to run that fast, you know? And it's like,
right.
It puts it in perspective that like, hey, you know, there's other people that finished way ahead of me that I would have given my right leg to run their race and they're complaining about it too. So it definitely keeps it in perspective that way.
Yeah, but it's very hard to see that perspective at 4 seconds.
After the fact. Oh, yes, yeah. Exactly. But when you started with the triathlons, I'm assuming that you probably didn't start at the Ironman distance. What was it?
I didn't.
That's probably a good decision.
I didn't. For the first several years, I started with what's called a sprint, but it's not always a set distance. So the one that we have out here is really more of a super sprint. It's a quarter mile swim, 10 mile bike. I think it's 10. It might be 12. And a 5K run.
Gotcha. at what point in, and especially since you said that the swim is something that has always been the weakest link, and quite honestly, probably the swim is what's keeping me from even dipping my toe, kind of pun somewhat intended, into the triathlon waters. At what point were you like, you know what, like let's keep pushing this, and yeah, 2.4 miles of swimming, which I can't even, I don't know if I swim that much in a year. Yeah. At what point were you like, hey, let's give this Ironman thing a shot?
Well, I'm also going to throw my brother under the bus here because it was his idea.
It's
yeah,
no, he was family pressure.
You know, and he's never done it. He got me started and then he backed out. So, but we were watching, I think, a replay of the Hawaii Ironman, or maybe even just an ad for the Hawaii Ironman. And my brother said, oh, that's what we should do, is we should sign up for and train for an Ironman. And we were doing sprint races at this point. And I said, I am not interested in this. I said, I'm the only one sitting in this room who's done an Ironman. I mean, done a marathon, a running marathon. Mm-hmm. And I said, and at the end of that, I can't like do anything else. Like that's everything I've got is what it took for that 26 miles. And he said, ah, da, da. But then we slowly upped it. So we went from there to an Olympic, which is about twice the distance of the sprint that I had done. And it's a mile swim. And then from there I did, 3 half irons. And my plan was that by doing the half iron, which is a 70.3, I would figure out if I enjoyed the really super ultra long distances. Mm-hmm. And then I would decide if I wanted to go for the full thing. So I did the 3. And I think it was after the second one, he said, oh, you know what? And then I can throw him under the bus. But the truth is he and his wife had a baby. Mm-hmm. So it would have been a terrible time for him to train for an Ironman. So he said, oh, I'm out. And then I had a decision to make. Was I going to stop and wait a couple years till his kids were older and then start again? Or I felt like I was halfway trained for this giant race. Mm-hmm. Should I just push forward? And I decided to push forward and train for the full. And at the time, I was really pretty sure that it would be my one and only full Ironman. And I also had the pressure of that I was turning 40. Mm. So I thought that would be kind of good. Like do this, you know, I'm 40 and let me do this, have this big achievement that I'm 40. And that was a lot of fun. So that's what I decided. But I will tell you, with the 2.4 mile swim, I did not know I was going to finish that until I finished it on race day. Mm-hmm. And the race pictures, they're all tied to the number. So like in a running race, it's on your bib. Mm-hmm. And in a triathlon, they write it on your arm because you don't have your bib on till the run. But in the swim, sometimes you can't see a number because we're all covered up and we're wet and whatever. So you don't often get your swim pictures coming out of the swim unless they happen to catch you at the right angle. But I went back to the people who took the race photos and I was like, listen, can we see if we can find my picture coming out of the swim? Because that was the thing I was the most proud of. I was like, I was so happy to finish that swim and still be standing. And so I have that actually in my closet and I see it every day, the picture of me coming out of that swim.
Wow. What, I want to go back just a second to something you said about the marathon, and how, you know, at the end of a marathon, like that's it, you're done. And I've,
yeah,
you know, I've been there several times and I've said on the show several times that like 26.2 is good. 26.3, no thanks.
Yeah.
And this is such a stupid question and I know it's a stupid question and I'm going to ask it anyway. I wish I had a better question than this, but, what is the difference besides the obvious, the 2.4 and the 114 miles or whatever it is, what is the difference between the marathon itself and the marathon at the end of an Ironman?
Oh, it's pretty hilarious actually. So you've talked to people who've done ultra runs, like mm-hmm. the 100 mile. So because that also is a massive commitment that seems insane. I've never done that. So I've talked to people who've done it, but I've never done one. But the Ironman marathon is totally mental to an extent. Totally to an extent. That makes no sense. It's a huge portion mental because you're very fatigued. So for someone like me, I have already been moving. And so Jan Frodeno just set a world record for the 140.6 distance this past week in Germany. And he was like at 7 hours and 15 minutes for the whole thing, which is insane. For me, it takes me between 13 and 15 hours, depending on the course. So after the bike, I've already been up and moving at like an aerobic pace for probably seven and a half hours. And so that's a long time. Like I'm fatigued. And depending on the bike course, my legs are tired, but, and they are different muscles, right, running and cycling, but my hips are tired. My lower back might be tired. So it is sort, it's a totally surreal feeling the first time you do it. And I literally, the first time I came out of transition to start that marathon, I was laughing. I was laughing because I was tired. I was laughing because I couldn't believe that what I was going to do was go and run 26.2 miles. And to be honest, what I do is more like jog that 26.2 miles because, I have, it's every single time I train like crazy with the goal that I'm going to run this Ironman marathon, and I have yet to successfully pull one together. So they take me like 5 hours, 6 hours to get it done.
Like I said, I can't, I mean, you know, I enjoy the marathon distance. It's something that, I really look forward to having the opportunities to race, you know, 26.2 miles, but I can't imagine, you know, doing anything other than sleeping for the most part for the 7 hours before the race starts.
And, say there's a joke in that in Ironman training, which is that you'll never be so excited to start a marathon in your life because you're getting off the bike. So, you know, like after this giant bike ride, no matter how many times you do a 100-mile bike ride, you're really, really finished by the time you finish that 112 miles. And, you know, somebody comes out and says, can I take your bike? And you're like, you can have it. I never want to see it again. You know, and then you start the marathon. You'll never be so excited. And then about, I can't even really feel my legs moving very well until about 3 miles in. So that's on autopilot. You just have to tell yourself, I'm going to go for 3 miles and then I'm going to see how I feel. And the answer is you're not going to feel very good. So then you have to keep going.
Right. Do you do many just, again, just in air quotes here, just running races anymore, or do most of your running races come at the end of a triathlon of whatever distance?
I still, because the triathlons I'm doing right now are so long, I actually last year did more standalone running races than I did triathlons, because I could put them in as training races. Mm-hmm. And the training days are so long that I really love the break that a race will give me. And I have learned about myself that I love racing. Even if I'm not performing like overly well, I love the social aspect of races and I just love the camaraderie that comes with it. So when we have most of our races down here are January, February, like December, January, February, our half marathons and our marathons. We have 5Ks and things like that all year long. But we have the, from Palm Beach to, actually, if you back it up, like if you start with Space Coast, like so Space Coast in November and then Palm Beach in December and then Miami and Orlando in January and Fort Lauderdale A1A in February, which is that's my favorite local race down here. And then there's also, now there's a bunch of halves in the Keys, which I haven't done any, but there's like one in Isla Mirada and one in Key West. So, and I love to throw those in because the way I think about it, if I've got like a 10-mile run on my training schedule, I can sort of throw in a half marathon and instead of running, you know, by myself, I can go have sort of the festival environment. And if I do 3 or 4 of those in January and February, then I'm sort of annoyed by the whole sign up, pick up my packet, run the race, and I'm ready to buckle down and train for another couple months, you know, so.
Gotcha. Do you, when you do that, are you racing them hard or are they still just a party, but a training run?
So it depends on when it is. So, and it depends on when it is and when I register and if I can get organized enough to set a goal. I was trying to do, we have this thing down here called the Florida Storm. And at the, which is, I forget what races it is, but there's a bunch of half marathons and then they give you, it's just like this pile of hardware if you do them all.
Do them all.
And they're all local. It's like the Miami 13.1 and the Miami and the A1A. And it just seemed like at the very last minute, I was like, oh, maybe I can do all of these and get this gigantic pile of hardware. And the last one is like, if you do all five of these races, it's like either they fit together. I don't know. It's enormous. Mm. So I thought, oh, I'm going to try and do that. But about halfway through, I was like, this was a terrible idea. And I didn't get it done. So it kind of depends on where I am and what mood I'm in and who I can rope into doing it with me. So
gotcha.
I'll go both ways.
Right. Question on this has been on it's on my list because I feel like I heard maybe it was on one of the like the introductory episode of your podcast that you know you just enjoy the endurance aspect and doing endurance running and triathlons and all that kind of stuff. Any, and you mentioned you hadn't done an ultra yet, but is that a yet as a possibility or a probably not?
You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So that's really funny. We, this past Sunday on a bike ride, there were three of us and we were out for four hours. And we were regrouping at a corner and there was a guy running in the, and this is 11:30 in the in the morning, right? So he's out there, he's got a camelback on and I'm like, hey, how far are you running? You know, and I was expecting a big number because why else would you be out at 11:30 in the morning? Right. And with a camelback, like he was set up for the distance. So I said, and he said, oh, I'm out for 16. And we talked about, and he's training for a 100-mile run in Daytona coming up.
Yeah.
So we were talking about it. And then, you know, and we pedal off and it's three of us and the other two guys that were with me, they're getting ready to do Ironman Vineman in California in just a week. And they, as we pedal off, they both say, they're like, oh, no, thank you. No 100-mile runs for me. That's crazy. And I laughed because I was like, you guys, we're getting ready to do 140.6 miles,
right,
you know, in a different format. But the idea of running 100 miles is mentally one I have not gotten over. So I would, the other thing is that because a lot of the ultra runs are trail runs, mm-hmm, and I am not a good trail runner. For me, every stick is a snake until proven otherwise. Every shadow is, you know, a reptile that, so it's not something I have a lot of experience in. And so I would, but I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by the whole concept of it. So never say never. I would love to do some crewing for ultra runners so that I got to see it more
experience a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, some of them do not sound enjoyable. So for example, while I'm fascinated by Badwater, which is happening right now. So we did just put the, you know, the start videos up. Mm-hmm. The concept of that does not appeal to me because the whole thing sounds very uncomfortable.
You mean starting a race when it's 120 degrees in Death Valley? Like, it doesn't sound enjoyable. What about that doesn't sound enjoyable?
It, you know, people love it. People love it.
More power to them, not me.
Right. So that sounds very challenging to me. But yeah, there's definitely some out there that would be fun to do. But I don't know if I'd like to do them or just be a part of the experience, like go and be on somebody's team. That's the question. How about you? Do you think you'll ever do it?
Well, yes, I'll do an ultra at some point. There's a number of people listening right now that have been clamoring for a while that I need to venture into the uncharted waters of Ultra Marathonville. And I'll succumb at some point. I don't know when yet. There's nothing on the schedule yet. Y'all calm down, but it will happen at some point. But I mean,
so
like,
you could start though with like a 50K. Like,
oh,
I would
certainly
do a 50K because that's not that big a jump.
Oh yeah. We might start and finish at the 50K, but
right.
You know, like it's just, you know, kind of like you said with the trails, like I would love to do more trail running, but it's just not, there's not much for trails,
there's not,
you know, in this part of it. Everything's a swamp. If it's not paved, it's a swamp. So like,
well, yeah, no, one of our ultras that we have out here is the Everglades Ultra, which I'm too, I didn't grow up down here. I'm too skittish to even like, you know, volunteer for that. You know, it's not, will you jump over an alligator? It's how many?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
No, thanks. No, thank you. So shifting gears a little bit, the podcast, why mileaftermilepodcast.com, right? That's the link.
That's right. Yeah. Mile After Mile podcast.
Just, you know, whatever podcast device you're listening to, it, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you can probably find Mile After Mile if you search that there. But what was it that got you, starting with a bit by the podcasting bug?
So I had been listening to podcasts, It's one of those things where things sort of came together all in, like there was a little piece of one part and a little piece of another part, and then there was just a leap of faith. So I had gotten my coaching certificate. I was beginning coaching. I was doing some business research and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I was listening to podcasts while I was doing indoor training. While treadmill running is maybe one of the more boring things that people do, indoor cycling, which is like a treadmill for the bike, so it's a stationary bike, is really, really mentally challenging. And so a lot of people watch TV, but when I watch TV, it's too captivating and I find that I just slow down yeah, exactly. And so, but a podcast, I can stay focused on my workout and do that. So I was listening to podcasts and I was doing these things and I had, been accumulating my own sort of repertoire of these crazy endurance stories, people that I had met along the way that had helped me redefine what was possible for me. So when I was training for my first Ironman, there were two people who, not on purpose or in any way that they knew that they did, really helped me shift my concept of that's something that other people can do to that's something that I can maybe do. And one of them was a girl training for a Badwater double. And I read her blog while I was training. I was like, holy cow, if this person can do this, then I can do my next workout. And the other was a woman named Susan Hogg, who just did the race in Germany called Challenge Roth. And this one was her 93rd iron distance race.
Wow.
But when I met her, I had gone down to cheer for my friends who were who were racing Ironman Cozumel. It was about 6 months before I did my Ironman, and she was doing, at that point, it was probably her 60th Ironman. But so my friends were there and they had obsessed about everything they ate for like 30 days and they were super stressed out getting ready for this race. And she was lounging in the lobby of this hotel, drinking a beer and eating a taco. And I was like, oh, you're not racing, are you? She's like, yeah, absolutely. And then it turned out that the next day was a super hard race. And of the people that I knew that had trained really hard and been really, you know, really high tuned, half of them didn't finish, but she did. She finished with a smile and was fine. And watching her do that, I was like, oh my God, real people who are relaxed. And I don't think a lot of people have a beer and a taco before they race a full Ironman, but Susan does. And those two stories. And then so the fact that I had this sort of list of things that I would do, that I would tell people these extreme stories of regular people doing amazing things. And the podcast sort of began to form in my mind. And then it was really kind of a leap of faith. Around just after Thanksgiving, I said to my husband and my kids, I was like, hey, what do you think? I would do this podcast. And we were in a rental car. We were visiting people out of town. So they were trapped and they couldn't, you know, they couldn't get away from me and ignore it. And they didn't laugh. And so then I went home and I started to research it. I don't know if you did a lot of research before you started your podcast, but I started, you know, do what you do, Google, how do you make a podcast? And I had lists of things I was going to do. And then I told myself, I said, you know what? I either have to just commit to this and see what happens, or I'm just going to be making these lists forever. So I sat down and I made a list of three people who would I like to hear their stories. And I emailed them blindly. These were all strangers because I was still too nervous to tell anybody that I actually knew that I was going to do this, that I would like to interview them for this podcast. And 30 minutes later, one of them wrote me back and said, yeah, that's great. I'd love to do it.
Now you're stuck.
I was stuck. I immediately after I was like, Amazon, order a microphone. And that's how it started.
And the rest is history. What's been the biggest, and we might lose a few people here, but that's fine. We'll go podcast nerd here for a second. What's been the biggest kind of learning curve for you when it comes to doing your own show?
What has been, for some reason, the whole idea of the podcast hosting was a complete and total mystery to me until I just signed up the account. Like it was like, even like, so like with any specialty business, there's all these company names that make mm-hmm. no sense until, you know, people just refer to them by their shortcuts. So the company that hosts all the podcast, Libsyn, you know, people keep saying, oh, you set up your Libsyn account, you set up your Libsyn account. I was like, what are they talking about? Yes. I could not like wrap my head around it until I had, and it's one of those things where you kind of have to set it up blindly. You're like mm-hmm. paying for it before you know what you're getting. So like I signed up for the account, and then all of a sudden once it opened up, I was like, aha, okay, now I see what this is. And, but that was really, it really is, it is pretty straightforward once you figure out how you're going to do it. I found lots of things that were like, here's a list of what to do. Mm. And then I just jumped in and blindly proceeded forward.
Sometimes that's the best bet, though. Like, instead of worrying about trying to make everything perfect, which I know a lot of folks that I've met through the different podcasting circles that aren't necessarily running fitness type of podcasts, but just in general, that it's like they'll spend months and months and months trying to make everything perfect. And like, you know, y'all, nothing's ever perfect. Like, you just got to start and then adjust and tweak and make it better as you go.
Yes. Well, and that's something that luckily worked out well for me, because I knew that I didn't know how to do it perfectly. Mm-hmm. And somebody did send me, like a training for how to edit and do these, you know, 10 things. And I didn't understand any of the article. And I just, for whatever reason, I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to worry about that right now. I'm going to do this and see what happens. And if nothing happens, no harm, no fail. So I plunged forward and did it. And I had several questions, you know, would it work? Right. Like, so would anybody listen right. other than my husband, who I don't think actually ever listens. So, would anybody agree to let me interview them? That was a big concern. And then the other one was, would I be able to find enough crazy stories?
I bet you.
Yeah, it's interesting. So far, I haven't run out. Every once in a while, I feel like I'm like, oh, are there any other crazy races out there? You know, and then I'll sit down and you know, attack Google and come up mm-hmm. with things like, oh my gosh, I never knew this was out there. So,
yeah, there's all kinds of those. Just, I mean, you know, just crazy stuff. Where it's like, yeah. who would do this? This type of race, and you know, then you start getting into some of those circles where, whether it's ultra marathon stuff or yes. obstacle races or Ironmans or whatever, multi-sport stuff, and you start to hear, just, you know, once you penetrate the inner circle a little bit, like they're just coming yes. out of the woodwork.
Yeah, no, I call it going down the endurance rabbit hole mm-hmm. because, so if you're doing 5K races, running a marathon seems like the craziest thing you could ever think of.
Right.
And
you don't even know that the ultra world exists at that point.
That's right. That's the mm-hmm. thing that's so crazy. You don't even know it's out there. Like the ultra world, you will never know anybody who even does it until the one day you're sitting at like breakfast after your long run or whatever, and somebody comes over and they're like, oh, they're training for a 50 miler. And you're like, what?
Wait, people do that? That's not a thing, right?
Yes. That's not, what? How did that even work? And then, you know, once you cross that line into that circle, then you meet all these other people who do these things, you know, like, one of my favorite interviews that I did, I interviewed a guy who did the 50 marathons in all, the marathon in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. And he did his first one when he was 60.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like a great like story, like, cause it's not the way, you know, you mm-hmm. think of that happening. And he, it's not in every state, but where there were states, one of his favorite things he did was he visited the presidential libraries. Mm. In the states where they had them. And that was one of the way he enjoyed the different states. I think that's very awesome. Interesting because it's a generational thing. I was like, I didn't even know there were presidential libraries.
But. Right. Well, and it also, you know, the message of it's never too late. Like,
it's, you know, never too late. Absolutely.
Wow. That's cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know what episode that is offhand? I'll link to it in the show notes.
I will definitely follow up because I think it's like 13 or something like that. But his name is Larry Horton. Right. He's a great guy. He did a lot of team and training type stuff, and he runs at least one of the marathons in an Elvis suit. He's one of those folks that you really think that you'd like to run with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like sure.
it's a good story. So and those stories, everybody reacts to it differently when you tell these extreme stories. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like a safety mechanism. It's like, all right, if I think that what I'm doing is extreme, I need somebody else out there doing something else more extreme. And then I feel like what I'm trying is very, very doable.
Yeah. And there's always somebody doing something more extreme, no matter what they're doing. There's always something that's bigger and it's crazy.
No, that's the thing is like, that is definitely true. I suppose there's got to be a limit to it somewhere, but I haven't found it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows where? So is there starting to get a little close to wrapping this thing up here, Amy? I'd love to ask kind of a question for you to put your triathlon coaching hat on for a second. For folks that are listening to this that are runners and maybe, like I said, maybe I fall into this as well because I haven't done a triathlon yet. For people that are runners and maybe looking to dabble a little bit, you know, to try out the triathlon experience. As a triathlon coach, what are, you know, a tip, trick, a couple things that those of us that maybe want to do our first triathlon should consider or think about doing, or how do we start to get ready for that instead of just running all the time, but actually, you know, getting into the water, doing the swim, you know, doing the transitions, that type of stuff.
So if you really are not a swimmer at all, but you have a bike and you run, so because some runners do cross training on the bike. And as we get older, that's more true. I think it comes from the fact that cycling has less wear and tear on your knees. So, you find that there's most people who come to me from that spot, they are runners who then took up some cycling, a little bit of cycling, with their friends. And so they might have a bike most people have a bike or know how to ride a bike. So then you can actually do what's called a duathlon.
Right.
And they're almost always held at the same time as a triathlon. Like, so it's a subset of the same event. And then you get a feeling without the swim of what the multi-sport feels like. So you do a very short run. So it's like maybe a mile run. You come into transition. Your bike is with everybody else. You get the full experience. You go out, you do your bike and you come back and then you do a run and you get to experience it. And so that's a great first way to do it. And then if you decide you love that feeling, that the idea of the multi-sport is super fun and you want to go for the triathlon, then you want to find your way to some swimming lessons. Mm-hmm. And when we're a grown up, we don't call them swimming lessons anymore, right? We call it swim coaching.
Right.
We call it swim coaching. And the best way that I think to get started with swimming is by looking up a coach through what's the Masters Swimming, U.S. Masters Swimming, USMS.org. And Masters just means grown up.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you have to be an expert swimmer. So they list for every state all of their Masters training groups and all of the people that they've certified to be able to teach adults how to swim. And you can contact any of those people near you, and then they will help you make the plunge of getting into the pool. Because if you didn't grow up swimming, that is the biggest thing. And the other resource that's super good for people who are trying to get in the pool for the first time that want to do a triathlon is if you have a local YMCA. So I don't know if Lakeland is close enough, but you guys have by Universal, there's a huge YMCA. Mm. And they do all kinds of things. And they even do an underwater polo.
Wow.
It's like, I've never seen it, but I just saw a flyer. The other thing they have in Orlando, once you get in the pool, which is near you, which I'll tell you, you have one of the coolest open water swimming, kind of, I'm going to call it a club, by you, which is called Lucky's Lake Swim.
Okay.
And so you can look it up because it's right by you. You won't even believe it when you find out how like amazing it is. It's this guy who has a house on a lake. And he's an open water swimmer. And so every day, 365 days a year, he opens up his house and you leave from his dock and you swim across the lake and back. And during the week, 20 or 30 people will come, maybe 50. On the weekends, you might get 70 to 100 people all joining him with the lake. And he has you sign the wall and he has a registration. Huh. And it's like a whole club. And it's fantastic because he's a great guy and it's a wonderful community event. So that's right by you in Central Florida, Lucky's Lake Swim.
Wow. That would be kind of a cool thing, even if you didn't want to get into triathlons, but just to, you know.
Absolutely. And you can go out. Yes. And you can go out and do that swim with him. I don't know with a life jacket necessarily, but with fins, with a pull buoy. There, the time I did it, there was a guy who swam it with his dog. You know, like, so it's mind blowing how many people come out there to do it. But it's a wonderful community, just very similar to running. You've got like people who are all shapes and sizes and all ages and abilities in triathlons. And that's the reason I say, you know, if you're curious about it and mm-hmm. swimming is the thing that's in your way, you can do a duathlon and then see it and see if you have any interest in it. And I actually, the first triathlon that I was a part of, I went as a volunteer mm-hmm. and I just watched because right. I was like, oh, let's even see if I want to do this. And this was after I had agreed to do one with my brother. But I was like, let me go see one and figure out what in the world this is all about. So I stood there and acted like I knew what I was doing. And I will never forget, a guy went by and he had on his bike, because you think of triathletes as, you know, uber competitive, uber fit, you know, super serious. And this guy went by and somebody was in his way and he had one of those balloon horns on his bike. And he squawked it at the guy, went, "Auga!" You know, it was hilarious. Everybody was laughing, you know, it's all in good fun. Mm. It's all in good fun.
Fantastic, fantastic. One last question for you, Amy. At this point in your life, how, and normally I would ask this as running, but I'm going to ask this as endurance sports in general, so you can go whichever kind of route or accumulation or whatever is you want to, but how would you say that being an endurance athlete has changed you from where you were before you started in the running and triathlon world?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. How has it changed me? I think that it's very interesting because I give endurance sports a lot of credit for shaping things in my life, for letting me break things down and saying, you know, okay, I can do this. Let's just figure out how to get it done. But as I get older and wiser and, you know, get my wisdom highlights and things like that, I'm not sure if it's necessarily totally due to the endurance sports or whether or not it's just, you know, you can do that with other things. So like I find that people who are good at endurance sports and find their way to endurance sports and enjoy them, I find that they're pretty motivated, accomplished people in other parts of their life as well. So, you know, you'll find a guy who does, you know, 1,000 marathons or something, you know, like just
a ridiculous
off the
number,
wall,
right?
Just a ridiculous, you know, but they may also be like a surgeon. And it's interesting because it's like the same commitment of, all right, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do this race. That's the same kind of commitment that gets us through, you know, job training, whether that's, you know, trade training or undergrad or graduate school, you know, all of those skills sort of wrap together in a certain thing. But I always give credit to the endurance sports for that. Like, so I know for myself that if I can get out there and do a 100-mile bike ride, then the next thing that pops up in my life, I'm like, you know what, I can handle this. I just need to figure out how I'm going to handle it. But other than that, I think that for me, it's my huge stress relief. Mm-hmm. So there are tons of things in my life that I cannot control, almost all of them directly related to my children. there's nothing, you know, I just have to take that in stride. But the thing that I can control is, all right, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do my best on whatever it is, my 30-minute run. And that's something that from start to finish I can control. And then that feeling of finishing the race and having somebody give me a medal, I love that because there's no other time, at least in my life, that somebody says, "Oh my gosh, good job. Look at what you did. Here, have a medal."
Right.
Good job. You know, that's like, so I love that. So those are the two things that endurance sports, I think of all the time that they do for me.
Gotcha. Great answers. Guys, AmySaysSo.com on the Twitter, BC at BC Amy Says So, and on Instagram and Twitter at Amy Says So Miami. I got all these S's in here. It's screwing me up. But
no, it's really hard.
Those are the places to connect with Amy, and I'll have those links in the show notes, DizRuns.com/293. And don't hesitate. Check out the Mile After Mile podcast. Once a week, twice a week, Amy? What are you? Once a week, right?
Okay. Once a week.
you got you know, a couple times with me and once with her, and that'll, you know, get you through at least a couple of your runs. So check out Mile After Mile podcast as well. Wherever podcasts are not even sold, wherever podcasts are free, you can probably find Mile After Mile podcast there as well. So
that's right.
Amy, thanks for taking the time today. Appreciate it. And I know you've got a big race coming up, Ironman in Colorado,
Ironman,
right?
Yep, Ironman Boulder on August 7th.
Oh, well, that's the
This
will be out right about either just before or just after. So either congratulations or best of luck, but it's going to be it's going to be live right about that same time. So hope nothing but the best in that race, obviously, and then obviously going forward, you know, continued success and continue to enjoy the podcasting world. It's a fun place to be.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Amy and myself. And as always, I'd love to know what stood out to you from this particular episode. What was your takeaway from our chat today? For me, I think it's almost seems childish, but what stood out to me is kind of the role that peer pressure can play and you know, the positive role that peer pressure can play. And in Amy's case, it was sibling pressure, which perhaps is more powerful than peer pressure in and of itself. But if you remember back to the early stages of our chat here today, Amy mentioned that kind of she got into running almost by accident, but was talked into going from a fitness 101 class to a half marathon training program. And then her brother talked her into, you know, running marathons and trying triathlons and eventually trying an Ironman. And, you know, at each stage, Amy could have said no, could have decided that wasn't what she wanted to do, but kind of gave into the power of a little bit of peer pressure. And in the case with her brother, like I said, sibling pressure. And look where she is now. And I guess what stood out to me about that is that we as runners can influence those around us, our friends, our family, to maybe take up the sport, to maybe give it a shot. Maybe we can be that peer. We can be that sibling that is applying the pressure to help our friends and loved ones, you know, to not only do something that can be good for their health, but to do something that can, you know, lead to a new passion that they didn't even know existed. And that kind of sounds like that's exactly what happened with Amy. And I got a feeling that that's what happened with a lot of us, is that somebody talked us into running that first race. And look where we are now. So be the squeaky wheel, be the peer or the sibling that's doing the pressuring. And you never know, you might change the course, at least of someone's life for the better. So That was my takeaway. Maybe a little different than what you thought it might have been, but that's kind of what stood out to me most from this episode. And as always, I'd love to know what stood out for you. Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/293. And leave a comment for the world to see what your takeaway was from this particular episode and see what other people have to say as well. And we'll get that conversation going on the website, which is always a lot of fun when it does happen. So DizRuns.com/293 for to leave a comment. And also, again, that's the show notes. So you have links to Amy's podcast, Mile After Mile, all of her contact information, website, social media, all that good stuff can be found right there as well. So with that, thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for entering the drawing. If you haven't done so already, DizRuns.com on the homepage, click the button. About 2 seconds later, you're entered. And you never know. May the random number generator smile upon you and pick you for the next monthly giveaway. And with that, thanks for listening, guys. I do appreciate it. This is a little bit of a longer episode today, but it was a good one. I hope, at least I thought it was a good one. Hope you did as well. Thanks for listening, as always. Appreciate your loyalty and your sharing and everything that you guys do. It's appreciated. Even just the feedback, even just the tweets once in a while, let me know that you enjoyed an episode. It means a lot. It means more than I can ever put into words. So thanks for all of that feedback, and may it continue. Have a great one, guys. Have a good rest of your day, and we'll talk again soon.